I
Okay,
gotcha.
got it. Okay,
Got
then back to the annual meeting, no problem. So, 49th annual meeting. Here we are. Thank you for coming. Basically, right after the plant sale around March 15th is when we started working, all staff started working from home. This is our 2019-2020 financial report, which is we are our requirement that we announce for the annual meeting. As usual, our financial report is strong. We continue to have more or less flawless audits, and the funding is strong. We are comfortably in the black, as you can see from looking year to year, and a healthy general fund ending balance. There will be a reduction in that as we as we've purchased a new building in Staten, but still continue to be financially healthy, and more of the same. Here are our employees. Six of the eight have been here for 5 years or more: Jenny Ammon, Brandon Bishop, Janice Calkins, Sarah Hamilton, Meredith Hoffman, Jane Kappinger, Jenny Mizell, Susan Ortiz, and Tom Wilson. And here are our board members. Obviously, there's been a few changes since then, but for purposes of the annual meeting, this is the directorship. You can notice that there are a number of people here. Lee Hardy, primarily here, has been here for 24 years. Yay, Lee. Doug Kramer, Tim Bielenberg, and Darren Olson, also being highly tenured board members. We continue to fund the Memorial Scholarship through the plant sale, and the scholarship this year named the Stan Vistinga Memorial College Scholarship, named after former board director Stan Vistinga. This year's winner was Caleb Yan. Last year at the annual meeting, you may have met Caleb. He's a very charming and bright and interested candidate, and we are delighted to give our scholarship to him. The next few slides reflect our media work. Due to COVID hitting in March 2020, we needed to reach people in a variety of different ways. The primary one was Facebook. You'll see how through the year, how number of followers, reflects the number of people that are on computers these days, including us. Increase you can see of from last year to this year. Urban conservation, social media programs, and here you can see increase in participants, increase in programs. Salmon Watch, one of the most popular hands-on learning programs. We hosted 11 schools. Plan for Your Land is another project that we have. 30 participants of 30 landowners have participated in the 4-night training, and very successful. And the participants were delighted with the results. Clear Grants, the di district invested about $12,500 in youth education through Clear Grants. And then here's where we spend the majority of our money, putting conservation practices into grants through into the ground, through these main four programs: LAP, SPG Cover Crops, and OEB Small Grants. We've put in $1,084,466. Well done, technical staff. This is a record year in terms of conservation in the ground. More on the LAP program. This slide 19, example of a newer project, pollinator hedgerow.
There we go. Yeah.
It's very exciting. Special projects grants. We had two of them this year. Vertical tillage aerator and I believe this is Kyle's, right?
Mute off. Yes, that was mine.
Yeah, that's really cool. And then the cover crop program, which got 780 acres of cover crops on the ground. We partner with ODA and pick a focus area every 2 years. We're finishing up in Mill Creek in June 2021. More on the focus area. And tech staff also write OWEB grants for clients. This is an example of a project that we partners with NRCS. Shampooing nutrient management. And we started adopting an online grant management program that we are exclusively using now. Our grant evaluators can go online and score the applications and see the scores on the, well, and can score the applications as well on this platform. It's been very efficient for us, especially in light of COVID. The native plant sale was our last live event of the year. We had 60% fewer customers, but sold more plants than the previous year. These slides, the next couple slides, highlight the collaborative work that we've done on KnotWeek projects with City of Salem and Marion County to reduce the invasive plants, and in particular knotweed. And finally, final slide. The staff is working to learn about diversity in Marion County and how to better serve the diverse needs in our district by collaborating with other districts and seeing what their issues and how they're approaching this issue. The staff transitioned almost seamlessly to working remotely, while many districts actually suffered significantly. The productivity level of the employees has exceeded any year in history, as shown in the total number of grants awarded and the total work done in the focus area. We were fortunate indeed, and we can be proud of having a well-run and productive district. So that is a very short and sweet annual meeting. It looks like I think we can stop share here. It looks like we have public comment at this point. And it also appears as if the entire board is here as well. So I know Marjan wanted to speak. Marjan, would you like to speak now?
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate you flexing with my showing up late and accommodating my appearance. I come from a background in water quality as I stepped in, from John's big shoes. After I understand he's up in Washington doing a lot of fishing now that he has left ODA, which sounds like a good thing to do. Yeah, forestry was really my area for a long time with water quality, approximately 15 years with Oregon Department of Forestry with those issues, with also a little bit of time in land use, permitting, sustainable business practices, things like that. But water quality was a consistent thing. So, you know, as the program water quality manager and soil and water conservation district manager, I'm just steadily as I can. Shortly after I came to ODA, COVID hit. So it's been interesting to try to network in a COVID arena as I captain my travels from house and office. So I just want to extend hello in my new role, and please call or contact me anytime. I'm here as, and you know, Brenda, of course, can also help me stay in tune with what you folks are dealing with. Your stats are amazing. That was neat to hear. Just quickly, I'll mention that we are having staffing changes with ODA in response to anticipated cutbacks with the governor's recommended budget. You're going to see staffing changes happening with that. We'll be sending out an announcement of what that'll happen, how that will be staffed shortly. So the people on my team that are providing services for you guys will be changing up. So stay tuned for that communication. And other things I want to make sure on your radar is about changes also due to, you know, losing staff. We want to right size some of our work. We've already started outreach on how to change how we do our biennial review process. And you would have heard or will hear soon about the opportunity to provide feedback about focus areas. Again, not saying these are going away, but that trying to right size those to resources and gain efficiency. So definitely looking forward to your feedback. In the near term on focus areas, stay tuned for opportunities with the biennial reviews for area plans. And finally, I want to make sure you're tracking. We have the February training event that Eric Nussbaum is putting on, targeted at particularly new directors. I hope you're getting the announcements about that. And our agricultural drainage channel program rollout that we started last year and are continuing into this year, that you can come to ODA now, or your landowners can come to ODA now for a subset of channels that used to, for ag drainage channel maintenance, that where you would have had to have gone to DSL before. If you have a seasonally dry channel, or one and one that is not in essential salmonid habitat, that can be a candidate to come in through a notification to ODA as opposed to DSL now. So that's just the highlights. And please reach out to me if you have any questions or concerns. Thank you.
So I actually have a question. So rather mm-hmm. than going through DSL, the perennial streams that are non-salmonid producing can be permitted through ODA, is that correct?
Well, okay, technically yes, but put a very large asterisk there. It would have to be an unusual circumstance where a perennial stream was dry. I know that's The legislation did not rule out perennial streams, but it would, the work cannot be happening when the channel is wet. If you can find the circumstance of a perennial stream that is dry and it's not ESH, there's some other prohibited conditions, but those are the biggest ones.
You and could so where technically... are the, is there some guidance regarding applicability? Online someplace?
Yes, if yeah, under the thank you, good question, nice pitch there for me. For the water quality program website, if you go to ODA to the water quality program, on the left nav side, you'll see a link to the Ag Drainage Channel Maintenance Program, and I can email that to Meredith as well.
Let me just add that Tyler Manatias, who is the person in charge of that program for Margan, is coming next Monday morning to speak to our staff meeting and give us the whole inside scoop. So Terry, if you make that staff meeting, you'll have the inside scoop.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you. My word, let's see here. 6:47. We still have time. Is there any other public comment that is desired? I'm tempted to say maybe, Meredith, if you wanted to give us the district, maybe Darren can chime in. Okay, if we have the district snapshot from Meredith right now, instead of in the regular board meeting. It is.
Or Al said he had something to say.
Al, yeah, please.
Yeah, you know, if you're looking to, you know, kill a few minutes, might as well get me out of the way too, and then you guys can get on with stuff. And so, sure. Like I said, I'm here representing the Oregon Soil and Water Conservation Commission, and we have our quarterly meeting next Tuesday and Wednesday. And like I said, I just want to check in with you guys before each of these meetings, and if there's any issues that you'd like for me to take to the state commission as a larger body, I'm more than willing to voice your concerns and opinions, and I'll try, if you have questions, I'll try my best to get some answers for you. And then I'll report back to you next month after the meeting and tell you what all went down. The one thing that, from what I can tell from looking at the agenda, and good thing we have Margan here, she can correct any mistakes I make, but it looks like we're going to be taking a look more at ORS 568. And particularly, it looks like we're going to be focusing on the director eligibility requirements, which I know from a couple other districts I've tuned in with, that's also a concern too. But yeah, any questions or concerns you have that might be better addressed at a state level for me?
I am curious about what the general pulse is about the director eligibility requirements. Do you have a sense?
Well, yes, I have a little bit of a sense. It kind of depends on where you live. If you live west of the Cascades, you see things one way. And if you live east of the Cascades, you see things completely opposite. And, I've only been in on this for a little bit, just a couple of meetings now. And I don't know exactly where the compromise is going to be, but there's going to have to be compromise, whatever it's going to wind up looking like. We could even get cats involved. And it depends. If you're from the east side of the state, they are very, it seems like they are generally in favor of directors owning sizable pieces, that is 10 acres or greater, of land that they're actively managing. And if you're from the west side of the Cascades, the Portland, Salem, Eugene area, you know, the more metro areas where land ownership tends to be smaller or non-existent, then those districts seem to favor more liberal requirements, such as just any kind of interest that you have, and regardless of the amount of property you own. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And being new on the SWCC, I'm very curious to see how things operate here. So, to be blunt, but yet as precise as I can be, give me the town or the district you live in, and I'll tell you how you probably feel.
Great. Thanks, Al. Anything else?
That's it for me. I'll just, like I said, I'll entertain any questions you have or concerns. Looks like Scotty's raising his hand.
Scott, please. Scott, you're muted. Um, Yeah, Scott, you are still muted. Maybe I can unmute him.
I think if he unplugs his headphones, we'll be able to hear him.
Yeah, we can't hear you. We cannot hear you, Scott.
I don't know if he's on the phone. If he's on the phone, sometimes you have to do the star six.
Huh. Okay. Well.
Well, I guess if you find out what he's concerned about, I believe you have my email, if nothing else. And so, you know, if you have something that Scott wants to be brought up, you can just email me with that. And, you know, the meeting's not till next Tuesday, so I'll have plenty of time for it.
Sure. No, that sounds fine. All right. Well, does anybody else have anything that they would like to announce?
I'm working now.
Now
there you are.
Go ahead, Scott.
The question I had for the gentleman was, how does that break down between taxpayer supported versus non-taxpayer supported districts?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And from what I can tell, just looking at the map and where districts are and who has the tax base, it seems like because most of the tax-based districts generally tend to be on the west side of the state, they're generally more in favor of the lesser land ownership requirements. Whereas the east side, you know, there's a few that are tax-based supported, but generally they're not. And they're the ones that are more in favor of the large landowner director membership requirements.
So do you think that the fact that people are paying taxes makes a difference in the attitude for the districts?
You know, it would appear to, but I would want to do a little bit more research, just because, you know, two things happen together doesn't implicate causality. It might just be the simple fact of urban versus rural dwellers, that urban people tend to live, you know, either in small home tracts or maybe not even own their homes at all. And urban populations tend to be more, you know,
okay,
in favor of being willing to pay taxes for certain services, whereas,
that's,
you know,
fine.
Smaller, more rural areas tend to be, and I hate to use the words liberal and conservative, but I think that might be applicable here, that the more conservative parts of the state, which tend to be maybe a little bit less in favor of paying taxes for some services like this. There seems to be some correlation, but it might just be simple demographics too, that I'd want to see more research on that.
Well, thank you for trying.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you know, if I find out anything, if I hear anything interesting,
yeah.
I will certainly let you know. That's something I'll keep my ears open for.
Terry, you're muted.
I just wanted to say we have another 5 minutes if anybody has anything they would like to chime in with.
I'll go ahead and give the district snapshot if you'd like.
Yeah, I'm just debating if that's if it's acceptable for us to do that, if it's something that's it's on the agenda. I wonder if it needs to be in the board meeting. I suppose there's not really going to be any decisions made. I would say, yeah, go ahead and give the district snapshot.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mary.
All right. I'm not sure which one to pick, so I'll pick this one. Am I screen sharing the district snapshot there?
Not right now.
Okay, almost there. How about now?
Yep, that's it.
Perfect. Okay. So each month we're going to have a district snapshot just for you board of directors, so you kind of know what's going on. First of all, the exciting news is the new director handbook, through a great deal of effort on Tom's part, is revised and it's updated and it's there on SharePoint for you to look at. So please keep trying to use SharePoint, get involved there, because it's going to be where everything we do is placed. We want to protect your personal integrity. We want to use your SharePoint addresses, which is firstname.lastname@marionswcd.net, because lots of other agencies or districts want to know who our directors are and want that information. And we don't want to share any personal emails or information that we don't have to. OACD had asked for that information just like they have for many years. And then they retracted that statement and said, we are not doing that anymore. So keep that in mind. Technically speaking, I've emailed some stuff to you at your firstname.lastname@marionswcd.net, thinking that you were signed up and using that. Apparently several of you aren't. It's okay. If you can use it, great. If you prefer not to, great. But let me know if you're not getting the emails or information, and I will know to switch you back to your traditional email. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to get the information. Good news, all the committees are up and running, and I want to say thanks to Janice, because there's a ton of paperwork and notices and follow-up minutes that go in and out on every committee meeting. February 18th, that's the new director training. I won't mention any names, but their initials are Brenda Sanchez and Kyle Ross. This is a great new director training meeting if you're able to go to it. And I think Morgan mentioned that as well. Three areas, the tech area. These guys are killing it. 19 LAPs. They were discussed, worked on, revised, reapproved, and brought forward tonight to the board for a vote. Many hours by the folks that evaluate them, and thanks to Brandon for kind of championing that. This year, you saw in the video or in the slideshow last year's plan for your land. We have planned for your land this year, too. It was our first one that we've done virtually. Wildly successful. Same thing, 25 or 30 folks. We got all kinds of information to them, their potential for soil and water conservation projects. The plant sale, you won't believe this. Last year was kind of a barn burner, but we already have over $12,000 sold. Our goal is 15. Several species are sold out. And thanks to Jenny M, she heads up that program. So just a great, great thing. In the education world, there's one CLEAR grant out being evaluated. The Erosion Control Summit was held. It was a great deal, 108 folks. They're working on First Friday. First Friday is, we have a landowner meeting the first Friday of every month. We used to do those live. Now we're doing them virtually and they're working well. Jenny's got a big plant shop going, workshop coming up. And I'm very proud of our chairman of the board. We are starting podcasts and really radio interviews with KMUZ, and our first person right there, as you can see, is Terry Hsu. So thank you, Conservation Spotlight podcast. So check that out. We're going to be having a whole list of very important people being interviewed by Jenny. So thank you, Jenny, for that. Our year-end payroll, we've got that done. It was a huge job. All of our tax reports, we got over $284,000 in conservation practices, projects in place. We're doing great. We got our laptops and our accessories. We got our ODA report filed. Yay! And on the budget committee, we have two members that were, those folks were, we asked them to re-up and they did. So things are going great administratively. They're going strong in the education field. And our tech is really our shining star right now. And there's things for you. The last thing I want to say is that Ed is available if you feel like you want a one-on-one session about SharePoint or just anything that has to do with SharePoint or getting your email dumped into SharePoint. You can do that. You can mesh those two so you can be productive. And that's it for the district for this month. We're feeling strong. Okay. Terry, you're muted.
Okay. Thank you, Meredith. With that, I think that concludes the public comment and the year in review highlights. I consider this annual meeting closed. Thank you all for attending. All right, moving along. Right now, we're about to begin the Board of Directors board meeting of Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021, starting at 7 o'clock on Zoom. I will announce the people that are present. And if I miss your name or misspeak, please chime in. Terry Hsu, Board Chair. Meredith Hoffman, Interim District Manager. Al Hernchen, Upper Willamette Watershed Council. Kyle Ross, Director. Margan Allen, ODA Water Quality. Dave Bedeau, Director. Lee Hardy, Associate. Chunky Tan, Associate. Brenda Sanchez, Director. Catherine Alexander Straub, Outdoors. Stephen Amos, Public. Darren Olson, Director. Mark Fields, Associate. Scott Walker, Associate. And then I believe that's Les Batchelor, NRCS. If I missed anybody, please let me know. If not, public comment period. Any members of the public, would they like to speak up? If not, on to the agenda. Agenda items that are desired to be added, removed. Go ahead, Scott.
I think there's still a add housing to your discussion.
Okay.
It's whether just to go review a couple of things that are.
Okay. So we'll have that under discussion items. After the admin committee state and lease release.
Okay.
So we'll call that 7A housing. Meredith, do we want to bring up a budget committee or not yet? Meredith, I'm not sure if you're muted. You may be.
I was trying to get unmuted there. I'll give a treasurer's report and we can talk a little bit about the budget stuff then if you want.
That sounds fine. Okay. If not, I think the... Dave, yes, chime, please.
If this is maybe a question for Kyle, that we don't have the program committee report on there. I don't know if there's something to add there. I know we're down on the agenda for number 10, but we talked about a few other things too.
Kyle, did you have...
Wherever we talked about the focus area stuff a little bit as well.
Should we put you down then, Kyle?
Sure, that would be fine.
All right, we'll put you down. How about we'll make you F for program committee?
Okay.
5F.
5F. Okay. Well, with that, let's move on. We have 5F for program committee, 7A for housing. All right, moving along. So, committees, please provide sort of a brief synopsis of what occurred in the meeting and anything relevant. If there are items that we're going to be discussing later, we don't know, need to go into great depth on that. But first of all, NRCS report, Les Batchelor. Les, are you there and unmuted? So question, the phone number 503-999-2556. Is that you, Les?
Hello, Gary, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Is that you, Les?
Yeah, I guess I'm having the same trouble that Meredith is, but I've been trying to set it unmuted. But anyway, welcome. Thanks for having me to this fine meeting tonight. But anyway, in trouble with electronics here. I am only calling in. I don't have my computer, but did want to mention that the first round of fire contracts, these are just for the stabilization contracts. Have been obligated to contract. So we, NRCS, we did about 100,000 in stabilization contracts. And we are in round two right now and working on those contracts, and they'll be finished up here in 2 weeks. We'll have those obligated, the remaining contracts. And we are working on just regular equip, but I did want to, let you know that we don't have a lot of applications as we usually do, probably due to the COVID and the outreach effort. It wasn't as good as, well, it isn't near as good as 2020 was, because we had February signups that were really big in 2020, right before COVID. So, but now, if we do want to get as many applications as we possibly could in the middle of Willamette. That's the irrigation funding pool. Everything west of I-5. So if you do happen to have, clients that come in with for the district and, want to get some irrigation improvement, we are in the second sign-up, and that will not actually end until April. So it's going to be open for quite a while. So we are contracting our first round applications. We've had a tremendous amount of, applicants that went ahead and deferred their applications till next year. I think the funds are kind of tight right now for a lot of people, and that's the reason that we don't have a lot of applications going forward. Same thing with the Howell Prairie. This is our last year in the Howell Prairie, and we don't have very many applications at all out there. But we did a tremendous amount last year in 2020. So that might be it. We just got to a lot of people, and that's about everything. But I did just want to mention our sign up number two ends April 4th. So if you know of anybody that would like to sign up in round two in the Howell Prairie or the middle of Willamette. And also we have the AFL funding pool, which is the North Coast and the lower Willamette Basin. We do have a few applications in there, so I think we're going to fund some pretty good dairy operations and some animal feeding operations with that. But and then we have the erosion control, that we do in orchards, and that's a four county program with Yamhill, Polk, Marion, and Washington County, and we have a few applications in that. And those are going to go to contract. And then we got the organic initiative and the energy initiative and the organic transition initiative. And we actually have one or two in each one of those categories. And I'll try to get my microphone fixed on my laptop. They actually have to install one on there. I want to get back into Zoom and participate with my laptop, but kind of makes it a little clunky if you have to use a phone and the laptop too. So, but that's all I have for NRCS. Are there any questions?
Well, it doesn't sound. Well,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Les. Moving along, Stroud Outdoors 2020 Outdoor Education Programs, Catherine.
Hi, so I wasn't sure if you guys were going to be able to fit that into the agenda. So I don't have the presentation, but I can definitely share it with you next month. I do have a couple of videos, one that we're uploading to our website in the next day for our outdoor school program. But in a nutshell, 2020 was a real roller coaster year for us too, but we made a couple of decisions as an organization that Marion Soil and Water Conservation District definitely facilitated. And one was to continue programming under guidance from the Oregon Health Authority. We were able to continue doing our summer day camp program and actually doubled the number of weeks that we were providing day camps. We purchased two more vans in order to be able to do the spacing required by OHA for kids. By the way, kids are awesome at mask wearing. They did a great job. We saw a lot of traumatized kids. So regardless of their socioeconomic background, how well their parents were doing at explaining what was going on, a global pandemic with an invisible contagion is a really scary thing for little kids, especially ones that are still thinking very concretely. So those early elementary school kids. So we saw a lot of behaviors, a lot of distress, and it was manifesting in various ways. One girl had refused to eat and drink because she was afraid the water was poisonous. She actually had to go to Dornbecker, as was admitted as a psychiatric patient, and came to our camp right after. So it was real. We are not a trauma-informed care literate organization going into 2020, and we are a trauma-informed care organization coming out of 2020. We had a kid that had it manifested as a bug phobia, and he literally was afraid he was going to be killed by bugs and even little daddy long legs. And we got him to where he was able to hold a woolly bear caterpillar, and it was we were all crying. It was amazing. So these little successes, I just want you to know, it just makes such a difference to have your support, because we doubled down financially, programmatically. We got a PPP loan. We got some COVID-19 emergency funding from the city, the state, and the county. That helped, but it definitely, our expenses increased immensely. So we dipped into reserve funding to be able to do this programming. After summer camp, that guidance ended. And the only way to continue programming was to become authorized as an emergency childcare provider. At that point, most of the parents that of the kids who were serving were frontline healthcare workers and natural resource managers. So between the wildfires and COVID, they were exhausted and they were looking down the barrel of having to help their kids with distance learning. It was just overwhelming for them. So we doubled down again and we got authorized as an emergency childcare provider. And we are continuing to provide emergency childcare for about 15 children. And their parents are, as you can imagine, very grateful. So I just want to thank you guys again. I'll have a short PowerPoint and I'll send it to Meredith. And if you guys would love to see it next time, it's only about 2 minutes. I'll also send you links for the new video that we're uploading. We're looking at outdoor school being a combination of virtual and blended. So we're ready for any scenario, all virtual, part in person. And residential, which is not allowed right now, but several schools are interested in reserving for the fall. This has state funding behind it from the Oregon Lottery Economic Development dollars. And so that helps with the direct costs, but the sponsorship from Marion Soil and Water Conservation District helps with those background indirect costs that no one thinks about, but they really make a huge difference. So I want to thank all of you again. It's been a wild year and we've learned a lot, but we made it and we've been doing good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Moving along, Education Committee, who would like to speak on that? From reading the Education Committee notes, it doesn't appear that there's a current chair, so who would like to speak on that? Scott, would you like to speak?
I will speak for it. There's not too much to say. You saw the notes in the meeting. I was Jenny's the victim for a test run on her interview process, and I want to congratulate Carrie on volunteering for that, for the real ones. There is a grant request on in file, but we didn't discuss it. Okay. It was more of an update rather than making decisions about anything. So that's why there's not much to talk about. We'd have nothing to bring to the board to make a decision about. But it was just a general update. So I'm sorry, nothing more exciting than that.
That's quite all right. Thank you very much, Scott. Admin committee, Chung Ki. Just a brief general synopsis, if you would.
Sorry, I was muted. But yeah, so the item is review of and questions of minutes of the admin committee. So the latest minute I have is the one dated October 2020. We made a few recommendations during that meeting. The main topic of the meeting was to discuss the delegation of authority document. And there were various things in there that needed changing. I'll just highlight a few that perhaps a little more relevant. One key one is that previously the district had a check and balance in accounting and finance, meaning that there is a administrative coordinator that does the accounting and that draws up checks. And then the district manager then signs the check if it's under $1,000. The new one, because we no longer have a administrative coordinator, so in the delegation of authority appears as if the district manager now has the authority for both drawing up checks, doing accounting, doing the budget, and signing the checks, which is not best practice. However, I was told that that is actually not the case, even though on the delegation of authority appears so, because Susan Ortiz, although she's in program, but she's now doing the accounts and she's the one that drafts checks to be signed. So
Chunky, I think we're going to be discussing that in more depth in under nine, under action items. So I don't know, I guess I'm just suggesting maybe just sort of summarizing.
Yeah, that is the main thing that's the most important. The rest will be discussed, as Terry says, in nine. This thing I'm talking about now is not in nine, so I'm highlighting that. Otherwise, what the admin committee has been doing is simply to look at the different standard operating procedure within the office and to make sure that they're all right tax balance. That's it. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Chung Ki. LAP committee, Meredith. Meredith, you're muted.
Okay, we had a great meeting. Out of that meeting came three requests. If you looked in your packet, this was on the first page. And these motions can be done now or later. But basically, the LAP meeting was to inspect those 19 LAPs. And that was done at the LAP meeting. And they were all recommended to be funded. The second thing that the LAP committee looked at was there isn't enough funding in there, so they are recommending that we shift the funds, and those funds would come out of the cover crop first to help fund that, and then the cost share grant program landowner assistance to get the rest of those funds. That second funding pool is... my screen sharing that? That second funding pool is the money that comes back. Like if we awarded 100,000 last year and someone wasn't able to do their project, we'd have 7,500 that came back. And so those are the two places that we can move money from cover crop, from the cost share. So we would like to, the LAP committee would like to have those motions made either by someone on the committee, which would be Dave or Lee, or any member could do that. This is the exact source of the funding. You saw that in there, where the funds are, where they would be moved from, so that we have those numbers that we need to cover that.
That sounds good. We'll how about we just wait till we get to 10 under action items and we'll discuss that.
We'll do that. Yeah. These are the 10, these are the 19 that were funded.
Okay.
Voted great. To be funded. That's it.
Great. Program committee, Kyle.
So we met yesterday. The main things we went over the SIA where we talked about last meeting with partnering with the ODA on that money. So that'll be an action item based on what we kind of discussed as a group for later. And then we also talked about the focus areas, or the focus area, which was going to be the headwaters of the Pudding River. So, and then I got elected as a chair for that committee. And that was, I guess, our meeting. I don't know if Dave has anything else to add, but that was what I had down at the end.
And you'll have a motion later to.
For the SIA.
For the SIA.
Correct.
Okay, cool.
The action items, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess I should have added under discussion items the manager hiring. We didn't include that, so that should be, we'll make that 7B for manager hiring. All right, so, okay, moving along. Treasurer's report, Meredith.
Okay, great. You have in front of you and also in your email and also on SharePoint and also in a hard copy, four places. This was our banking statement for December 1st through the 31st. I'm sure you've had time to look at it. It is actually two pages long. It shows the checks and the e-pays, as well as a fund transfer that we needed to do at the end. In addition to providing this check register, I wanted to provide for you how our resources and expenses are going. This is our summary sheet that we made up that we kind of track where we are year to date. So page one is our resources. We're at 62% in the bottom right-hand corner. Last month, we were at about 57%. So we're right on target where we expect to be in all of those categories, which is great. These are, page two is our expenditures. And we're at 34%. Expenses have been different this year because of COVID. So, but we're doing great. We're at 34% versus 28% last time. And here's our detailed expenses for December. And our next report is the three reserve funds. This report, page four, is the same. This is our unanticipated or catastrophic loss. Page. It's the same as it was in December. This reserve fund is called the Vehicle Reserve Fund. The district transferred the money out of there into the general fund to use for other things, and so it remains the same. This is our Building Reserve Fund. It's virtually the same. It's one of the places that's going to be seeing a little bit of action. The other thing I wanted to share with you is that the Oregon Department of Revenue is hosting their 2021 local budget law virtual training sessions. They begin in February. There are four of those sessions: proposing the budget, approving the budget, adopting the budget, and then changing the budget after it's been adopted. And those are kind of virtual law sessions that I will be attending. Susan will be attending some of them. Unique to this 21-22 financial year, our budget will be reflecting mostly construction costs of the new building, cost to move. So we will be working with Scott and the building committee to build those as accurate of numbers as we can come up with into the budget, which is pretty hard since we don't even have any estimates for some of them. As far as the budget committee, two of our board members whose terms expired agreed to serve again. They're Brent Stevenson, who was the chair, and Ralph Fisher. Also, I've met with Susan. She's our bookkeeper, and we are beginning to plan and have the process scheduled for about a month ahead of when Jane started, just so that we can ensure smooth sailing to the finish line for the budget this year. So that's all the treasurer's reports and the updates that I have, Terry.
I believe I would like to make a motion that we appoint, or that we have, that we make Meredith budget officer for the upcoming budget process.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Furthermore, I'd like to make the motion that we request that Brent Stevenson be our chair for the budget committee.
Terry, that's usually done at the budget committee.
Sorry, what?
Usually we put chair at budget committee because he has to accept.
He can't do it now.
Got it. Okay, so we're just appointing people to be on the budget committee at this point.
Correct.
All right, so then Ralph Fisher and Brent Stevenson, I move that they be placed on the budget committee.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Is there anything else that we should be discussing regarding the budget committee, Meredith?
Not that I know of. I think that's pretty inclusive. I think we're on our way.
Great. Okay. All right, moving along then. Admin committee, state and lease release, Chung Ki.
So as you guys know, we have a tenant there who was asked to be released early from the lease. And there was a lot of discussion in the admin committee when we last met. And the general consensus is that we should check with an architect as well as an attorney, the architect, to first determine how long would it take to do the renovation and to figure out if we can do it, when can we start doing it, can we get it done in time for the move in, because it was felt that if it takes a while to get all this thing done, then we should not release them from the lease, but make them pay through to the end, since we can't move into the building and start work there anyway. So for this board meeting, the decision was to bring it back so that the whole full board can make a decision based on what the architect has, hopefully, Scott was going to find out about that. Maybe Scott, you want to chime in here, what you found out from the architect.
I actually can chime in on this particular subject because I ended up contacting CB2 and we did get a quote from CB2 for $5,000 in order to evaluate the building for tenant improvements with respect to making the bathrooms ADA accessible, as well as potential expansion of the conference room and a rearrangement of the reception area. I did previously, when we originally went into the housing discussion with Terry Hancock, who we ended up hiring as our realtor, he made the recommendation of a number of architects, including Nathan Good and CB2. We inquired about others that would be available, and at the time we had determined that CB2 was the one who suited our needs the best. So we did do an evaluation. I did ask Aaron Turpening of CB2 to give us a quote. He's given us a quote of $5,000 to perform the work. So I would like to just sort of have permission to move forward with that, have the work done by CB2 and have them give their findings to us in terms of, you know, estimates of cost and alternatives for what we might want to do to the building.
Great. At the meantime, does the board want to make any decision on the lease termination request?
In my opinion, I think we should wait to get the information from the architect and then make a determination. I think the information can be, I think it can be relatively quickly acquired, that information.
Yeah, I agree. Let's wait until we get the information. It's not going to make a difference. That company will get out anytime, any option they have. So let's just hold off on that.
All right. So I guess the decision is not to tell them that we are still deliberating, and we'll let them know as soon as we can make a decision on that.
I mean, unless Dave or Brenda or Kyle, if you have any additional thoughts.
I guess I just think get the information, you know, from the architect, but. Have we seen any correspondence back from them since last meeting, or has it been silence from the tenants?
I haven't seen anything. How about you, Meredith?
No, they're waiting for us to respond to their letter. They asked to be released, and they're waiting for a reply from us.
We wouldn't want to put it off a whole nother month then. They probably would like to know what's going on.
Well, that's... That could be an approach. What would you suggest?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if we need the information from the architect, then I guess we can't do anything. So, I would think to at least respond to them and tell them why we're delaying. And
I would agree with that.
You know.
Dave, your thoughts?
No, I don't have any.
That's okay. Fair enough. All right.
I mean, they originally had the lease, right? So they're supposed to be paying, but now they're trying to get out of it. I mean,
yep.
Yeah, but
what happens if we just send them something at this point that says we're not wanting to let you out of the lease at this point? I mean, is that good, bad? I don't know.
Can't we just be good neighbors and community and let them out of their lease? I mean, is there a reason we have to keep them tied to us?
Because it's making us money and helping to pay for things. Like, that's $8,800. That's a couple LAPs, at least one big LAP. And they signed the lease. I mean, we're not doing anything. I mean, they signed the lease. But what if they were still using the building and they didn't want to leave until the end? I mean... I'm not trying to be mean, but they signed the paperwork, like, I don't know how many years ago.
I just worry if we say something, does it decrease our chances of getting something later on? I mean, they agreed to paying this amount of money. I mean, so I guess that's my feeling. I mean, I don't mean to be like mean to them or anything, but I'm like, gosh, they agreed to pay this kind of money. I guess if they offer to pay a certain sum of money that was reasonable, you know, we could let them out of it. I don't know.
Excuse me.
Yeah. Is that Scott? Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah. There's two conversations going on here. One is about the architect and the other is about the lease. So it'd be good to clean up and talk about one and finish the other one.
That seems reasonable. I mean, okay. we have an architect on board or potentially on board. I'd like to move forward. Okay. Award to the architect.
Let me ask one quick question, you Terry. When is he going to produce a product which will give us numbers?
I'd have to check in with him.
I think that's an important part of it, because if we're having him as the preliminary architect, okay, then we need to, you know, hurry along and get through the rest of the process.
Now, I don't have specific answer as far as what his timeline.
That's fine. I'm just sharing my opinion.
And I just thought I would, So basically, okay. Yes, he doesn't have a specific timeline. The sense I have from discussing with him is that it's not a hugely time-consuming effort. No. But availability is at the moment, I don't know. I'd have to talk to him.
Now, do you want to talk about the lease now or later?
I think we're on the discussion point. It seems like we should talk about it right now.
Okay. The background, I'm a quick little background for you. I shared this with Terry before in terms of lease. These folks, after we purchased the building, were bought up by a larger firm. And so they want to clean up business. Okay. Now, what I'm going to suggest to you, the board, is some of you may have heard before, but just as to give them 2 months off. Basically, they don't have to pay about $8,500, and they'll be paying the months of March, April, May, and let them off for June, July, and that would terminate the lease immediately. So that's my suggestion to y'all. I think it's something they would go for. I'm sensitive to Darren's concerns, so we want to get as much money as we can. Yeah. I'm also consensus to Chung Lee's concerns that we want to have a seamless enough process so we can't get in there and start remodeling when actually they're the tenants. So that's my advice to the board.
All right. Thank you, Scott. So, I mean, in my opinion, I think we wait till we get the information from the architect, which I think is not going to take very long. And we make a decision at that point. And if we want to let them off of 2 months of the lease, we can do that at that point. So it doesn't mean that we preclude doing that. I mean, that's how I would like to continue. I mean, unless somebody has something to the contrary. All right, then. Moving along. Let's see. This is so housing. Did we just complete housing, Scott, or was there something
else? You covered a couple of items. Okay. There's one couple of things is that a few months ago we passed a motion saying that we should file for tax exemption on the 408 building and in Staten. And I had a follow-up conversation a couple of days ago with the county assessor. And she had indicated that you should go to the Department of Revenue website and get form. I have a number here for the record, 150310088. And that's the form used to get an exemption from property taxes. What was most fascinating about the conversation, though, was the property tax exemption is based on the percentage of the building that the organization is. For example, in Hawthorne Street, we only use a third to a half of the building. but the landlord got an exemption for the entire building. So it was like he got extra exemptions because we weren't using space that we were renting. So it's not how much you rent, it's how much you use. So that's just an interesting little insight that I wasn't aware of, but that I share with the board. The other couple things quickly is that regardless what happens relative to the architect, we need to re-roof the building. When they did an inspection, they said there was only 1 year left in the roof. And so I think we should go ahead and get on and get a contractor to go ahead and re-roof the building. But that's a board decision to go ahead in that matter. At the price tag, it'll probably cost, it just requires informal bidding. That is to say, you call three people up and see what kind of numbers they'll give you. That's all it's required at the probable price tag for re-roofing the building. The last thing is I want to recommend that every board member, particularly who are being asked to vote on something, pay a visit to the building so they can see what we're talking about. And I'm available and other people are available to give you a tour of the building at your convenience, okay? So I really would think that it would inform you a lot in terms of the voting you have to do. So that's my song and dance.
Okay, Scott. So are you suggesting that we have some sort of a motion? I guess you wanted to have a motion about re-roofing the building.
Yeah. To proceed ahead.
Or to seek bids at this point, preliminary.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Informational.
Bids. The bids will come back to the board and they would approve one.
I would move that we seek three informal bids for re-roofing the portion of the building that was suggested by the inspector and for purpose of evaluation.
I'll second that with conversation.
All right, motion made and seconded. Discussion?
So, yes, I'm all up for re-roofing the building, but I want to make sure that we're only getting bids because I want to see what the architect has to say before we do the re-roofing. I hate to re-roof and then have to go rip up parts of it to change things, like the ADA bathrooms, put new holes in the ceiling or something, the roof. So we just want to be very mindful of that before we put the new roof on.
I would agree with that. Yes, Scott, go ahead.
Well, the re-roofing has nothing to do with what remodeling might occur inside the building. They're independent phenomena. That's why I was trying to get a different line of activity going because it's not hung up by architect questions.
I don't know if that's potentially not quite true. Like what Darren is suggesting, if indeed there's some rearrangement of the bathrooms required and maybe the venting has to be adjusted or something, then potentially there's some, you know, maybe the roof penetrations are slightly different. Then it could impact the roofing. So I think it's potentially relevant. Potentially relevant, unlikely to, but potentially relevant.
I think by the time we get the architect talking to us and the roofing bids back and get someone lined up, we should be okay. It's just, I wanted to make that point that we should be mindful of that.
No, I would agree with that personally.
And Terry?
Yeah.
And it's really for the entire roof. There's two, the flat portion and the slanted portion. The slanted portion has a little more life in it. But since you're doing the roofing job, you should probably do the whole damn thing.
Okay. I guess I would like to modify my motion slightly and say that we seek three bids and that we have Scott pursue those three bids.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
All right. Further discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? All right, motion carries. All right, going on, manager hiring. So I sent you all an email with a number of documents, And I'll go ahead and share screen here and talk through some of these documents. Let's see. All right, so. Okay, so basically, the admin committee met and we discussed, well, we need a new manager and we need to hire a manager. We discussed the possibility about hiring a firm to do this work. Council of Governments, for one, says they would do it for about $20,000. And a number of other places have said with some significant expense that they would do the work. And we all decided that we thought it would make much more sense for us to do the work in-house, because so much of hiring is, it's what we want, and we'd have to communicate what we want, and we'd have to, it just seems like we'd be inserting a middleman. And in my opinion, it's better if we just do it. So I sort of took it on myself to just go ahead and be the primary author on the documents. And I did that. I passed it around the admin committee. The admin committee gave all of their comments. Every single member of the admin committee that was present at the latest admin meeting, admin committee meeting, gave their comments. Afterwards, or almost concurrently, actually, we sought out the expertise of a person from Cascade Employers that does this sort of thing. And she made a few suggestions. And I said in my email to you what the comments were that she mentioned. And perhaps I should go ahead and share again what those comments were. Let's see. Let me switch over to my email. And I, okay, so this is my email. And now... Now we're goodness. Sorry, this is taking me longer than I have to shuffle a few things around here. Okay, so let's see. Let's see. Let's see. When did I send this? Goodness.
I say a few words while you're looking for that, Terry.
Sure, go ahead.
We met with her because she is an expert, and she specifically made some comments on behalf of Cascade Employers. And she felt in general all those documents were excellent. So we really appreciate the work that Terry did specifically to change some things. There were things like not putting, asking references for email or just very, very specific little things, but just a few edits. And both of us listened to all of her comments, and Terry made those edits to the documents. So I feel like they were well vetted, and I think you as a group could really feel like those could be approved, you know.
Let me go ahead and I'll chime in and I'll say what the comments were. So her thoughts were that I had some supplemental written responses, and she thought it was too long. She thought if you have too onerous application process, you will actually be reducing the number of people that you might actually be interested in. So she suggested that we have either 2 to 3 questions, but not 8. and so I pared it down. Some of those questions we can use as interview questions. Trudy, Meredith, and I came up with 2 that we thought were important, and we can discuss those. She had a few minor announcements she had a few edits to the job announcement. It was a 1-page announcement which I basically incorporated verbatim. And then she said that rather than including address, just an email and phone number is adequate for references. So I did that. So yes, I'm in concurrence with Meredith. I think we should move forward on these, but I thought I would go ahead and walk you through what we're doing here. I do think that, okay, one moment. I do think this is an extremely important decision for us. And so while I would love to just proceed forward with this, I also don't want to proceed hastily. I want everybody to feel confident that we're doing the right thing. So one of the things we didn't discuss with Trudy, but was the salaries. Now, this salary document, I'm trying to open it, and hopefully it opens and you can see it. Yeah. And why it is not opening, I do not know.
Copy over, Terry, but your share screen is not sharing.
Oh, there it is. Oh, can you see it now?
No, you need to share that application.
Got it. Okay. So here we are. This document was, I got this document from Benton SWCD. They did a salary survey where they were trying to figure out how much they should be paying their district manager. And so they hired somebody to finish this. This was done in 2018, 2019, which I thought was fairly recent and reasonable. So there's two main fields of question here. One is there's tax-based districts, and then there's non-tax-based districts. All right, let me move this over here. And if you average them out, there's a tax-based average for a district manager, which is this. And then there's a non-tax-based average, which is this, you know. This is what I think we should be looking at. And I looked at that and I was thinking, okay, well, what are the important, I just wanted to look a little, to take a deeper dive into the data. Here's Benton, Benton, Clackamas, you know, all these different counties. And it seemed like a basis of comparison could be the number of staff and what's the average household income in those particular counties. So I did that, and I looked at the various counties. Benton, Benton has 6 staff, 1 executive director, average household income of $70,835. I think to start with is we should look at Marion. 9 staff, 1 general district manager. Average household income, $56,341. So significantly lower than Benton County, for instance, right? Clackamas, 25 staff, also significantly higher average household income. Columbia County, a little bit lower average household income, a few lower staff, lower staff, lower paid executive director. Reasonable. East Multnomah, 23 staff, average household income higher, you know, the position pays quite well. Jackson County, which is the county I thought was most analogous to Marion County. If you look at Marion, we have an average household income of $56,341. Jackson is 57,571. They have 8 staff and executive, 1 executive director. I put down 9 staff with the assumption that we're going to be, that's including the executive director, I think. So I thought very similar, and their range is 73,375 to 115, which actually ends up being very, very similar. Here's Tualatin, also a little bit larger staff, larger average household income, Wasco, I thought, you know, much lower average household income, you know, fairly comparable number of staff. But it seems to me that doing something in the ballpark of salary range of 75,000 to 110,000 seemed reasonable to me. Does anybody have any thoughts?
I got, Terry, my one thought was, you know, if you looked at the salary of the manager in comparison to all the people underneath of them, so like most of the people are going to be conservation specialists, like how much would the manager make above them? Is it like 1.5 times or something if you compared it that way? Like, you don't want to have like a manager barely making more than his people underneath of him, but you also don't want to make a ton more either. I don't know, just another way of looking at it.
Yeah, no, that's very reasonable, and I think that is a very good consideration. Yeah, I have that information, so I can show you. Let me close this. Let's see, where is that?
It's on the sheet, Terry.
What's that?
Look, it's on your sheet. It's right on the sheet, was it? Because it talks about the second level person.
I didn't think it was actually on the sheet. It's, oh, here, this is it. Actually,
you could just say in generalities that they're in the 50s and the manager was in the 80s, Kyle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like looking through some of these, you know, like if you compare it to like the people underneath of them, you know, maybe the manager makes one a quarter to 1.5 times what like a conservationist would be, which would be a bunch of their staff. I don't know. I just, a different way of looking at, you know, like just looking at the progression up the pay scale, you know.
This might help you a little bit. So this is range 8 is the range of the manager currently.
Terry?
Yep.
The incumbent manager was making 82 and change, 82 and a half. But that was also a person who had been, I think it's step 6 or something like that. No, I'm sorry, it's step 8. Right in there somewhere.
It's range 8, but she was in the ballpark of
about 82,000.
Right, and this is old. This is 2016, so this is old, right?
But she also had been there for years, so she has a lot of time, which makes a big difference on your salary schedule.
I think
what you proposed is 75,000 as a minimum salary. Certainly is. I think it's a good number. For what it's worth.
But okay, so I think and correct me if I'm wrong, and these are old numbers, but it's gives you just it answers, I think, the question that Kyle has, which is, you know, how much is the manager making versus the employees. I think this is the range of most of the conservationists. This is the range of the manager. If we went 75 to 110 or something, it would be raising the top end quite significantly.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we're talking about, you know.
No, I think I guess those, the numbers you proposed, I think are numbers. I just was just looking at different ways.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, the top number is not going to be the higher, quite frankly, because that's for a person who has experience. But the only question you're higher is going to be between the 75 and 85, probably.
Depends, but yeah, potentially. Or I mean, depends on what their experience and, you know, background is. I mean, we may want to pay somebody a little bit more if we think they're going to be exceptional.
Yeah, I think having a wide range is good because, I mean, it may get more people applying. You know, you might find somebody like, hey, I really want that person.
Yeah, Brenda, you had a thought?
Well, I was just, I'm thinking that the range that you proposed, Terry, that's a nice competitive number. You know, you want to recruit good people. You want, I mean, you're going through a big change and you want the best to apply. So make sure that number will get you attract that too.
Yeah, Darren.
Also, Kyle, I know what you're saying, but remember, when it comes to the final number, it's going to be up to us board members to actually give that number and make that offer to her. So, you know, as long as we have that range there, we can adjust it to where we want it based on that person's qualifications. So,
yeah, no, I think that's good.
Okay, so do I have the go-ahead from you guys, 75 to 110?
Based on experience and what they bring.
Based on experience and education.
You need to have a top number on the recruitment.
I'm sorry, what's that?
Can you just say it, a minimum of, and then based on experience, higher or something like that?
Yeah, it does say that already in the recruitment. We can go back to that.
Yeah, I think that's a safe thing to do.
Okay, so good. Then let's start with, let's go to the job description. Let's see, 1 second, there it is, okay. Interesting.
I've got it too, Terry, right here if you need it.
Yeah, for some reason it's
unscreen share and I'll put it up there.
Yeah, I mean I have it on, but for some reason it's not sharing it.
Meredith, you should be able to click on the bottom of your screen, share screen. Is it
Here it is. I've got it here. I've got it. There it is.
Well, I just did. We're co. Is that yours or mine? Mine looks just like that.
Yeah. So this is the this is the job description. I'm sorry. I mean this is good to look at too. Did everybody have a chance to look at these, by the way?
Yes.
Okay.
Terry, to meet our process, we do actually have to have the board members vote on the job description and pass it. That's correct. Part of the.
Okay.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, no, Scott was concurring. So if everybody had a chance to look at the district manager job description, does everybody like it, and does somebody want to make a motion approving it?
I'll make the motion that we approve the job description presented this evening.
I can second that.
All right, motion made and seconded. Discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? All right, job description passed. Okay, next. I feel like I'm being a little bit anal about this, but at the same time, I also think it's super important.
Joy.
Okay, so here's the job announcement. And this was heavily edited, actually, by Trudy at Cascade. Honestly, I didn't think the other one was too bad, but she felt strongly this would be a better way to put it. I thought that was okay. So let's take a look
at that one. Did we have a change to, we want to change that to district manager.
We do want to change that to district manager, and I will do that right now. Hang on.
What I really liked about this is it sounds more enticing, more interesting. Than the way we used to write position announcements. It makes it sound more personal, and it's more attractive. I think it will do well.
So looking at it, this is, those are the changes. Now I know, Scott, you made the comment that you thought 5 years was too many. We're pigeonholing. You thought we were pigeonholing ourselves a bit.
That's my comment. Yeah, still is. But it's your business. You guys vote. I don't.
Does anybody want to leave it at five, or would somebody like to do you think that it should be three? Now I should make a comment that the in the application it says 5 years, but you can substitute education or experience or other experience for those 5 years.
But I guess I feel like 5 years seems adequate. I mean, I guess what's management experience? Having a few people underneath you and you're managing them, or an entire organization? I guess but the person counts.
Yeah, I mean, it leaves it open to some interpretation, which doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I agree. I like it.
Sorry. Scott.
My concern arises from the comments they made up in Clackamas in terms of their job recruitment. They thought in their announcement that they had said 5 years had excluded a lot of potential candidates. Now, that's why they don't even bother to fill it out. So again, that's why I raised the question to Terry, because of Clackamas' experience and their regrets in terms of their own recent hiring. But that's the basis for my concern, was Clackamas' experience.
I mean, I guess, you know, there's no harm in putting three, and certainly if somebody has more, that makes them more attractive.
Yeah, it's not a hiring decision.
Maybe just the same thing, the and or 5 years of management experience and or something that could be substituted.
It might be good at least in this position announcement to say at least 3 years.
That would be cool. Yeah.
It's got to be the same everywhere.
Dave.
I don't think 5 years is out of line for the responsibilities of this position. And though we'd want to get it filled quickly, I guess if you don't get a pool of suitable applicants, you can lower it then. But I don't think 5 years is out of line with what we're looking for.
So that's the other thing, is the way, and we could talk about process a little bit, because we did discuss process with Trudy as well.
Is there a way to put anything in there? So it's like priority will be given to somebody with at least 5 years experience.
Remember, this is a job announcement. It's not an application at all.
Yeah, I mean, we could do something like that, but I mean, but would we want to? I mean, if somebody had 3 years then, and we thought they were great.
I mean, I think 5 years is good. I was just...
Well, your goal would be to get a lot of applicants, so you have a nice pool to work with and choose from. Experience has a lot to offer, but some people may really progress as a leader, or you know, with having managed 2 or 3 years. So,
curious about Lee, your thoughts, Chunky, Mark.
This is Lee, and I would say that I'm in favor of the five-year management, with the idea of other experience may be substituted for part of this requirement. But like you say, this is just an announcement. It's not the actual description.
Chunky?
Well, I think what you're considering is how many applications do you want to get, right? So if you want to get more, then you put a lower number. If you want, you don't want to review so many, then you put a higher one, and they auto filter themselves. So how many, I mean, ultimately is how much work you want to do to filter them, because among the lower number, they may be one very good one, but you probably have to read through, you know, one more application to find it. So that's, for me, that's what the situation is.
I mean, one comment from Trudy was she thought the job sounded very attractive. She thought there would be a lot of people applying, is her impression.
And also, if someone is going to be 7 or 8 employees and 7 or 8 great board members, they need 5 years of management experience.
Not 8. It's definitely okay, not 8.
Seven.
Unless you count Al, except for Al. If you count Al, then it's 8.
I have a comment about this.
Yeah, Darren.
3 to 5. I don't think we should spend much more time on this, but let's say we put 5 out and we don't get as many people as we want, and then we re-release it saying 3 years. Will people read it the second time around? You know, put 3 now, people are going to look at it. But I've seen that before job applications. They put something out and they make a little tweak to it, and I don't always look at them again.
I don't know. I think people would look. I don't think it would deter people. They'd go, they're looking at 3. Okay, well, all right, maybe I'll go for it now. I mean, sure.
Mark says, I believe 3 years may open the number of applicants for those who apply and then consider the experience.
Ah, okay.
Oh.
I think Chair should just make a decision and we should move on.
Fair enough. All right. I'm probably getting too much participation from people. I should exert my iron fist right now. Let's stick with 5. If we have to change it to 3, let's change it. But otherwise, let's just go with this. Okay. All right. Let's see. Just so you, I mean, we should go through all of this. So we went through the job description. We went through, just so you guys know real quickly, this is the app. You guys looked at the application though, right?
Yeah.
Everybody saw all these documents, correct?
Yeah.
All right. So any comments on the job application? If you think it looks okay, then job application's going through. Okay, the written responses are different. This you should see.
Are we laying out the process too?
Yes, we are. So this is the questions. And Trudy thought that 8 questions was way too many. It should be no more than 2 or 3. And they should be the type of questions which would, address or funnel out, like winnow out the ones that we want versus the ones that we don't want. And then we can start asking more specific questions in the interview. Any concerns about these 2 questions? If I don't hear anything, I'm going to say it's okay and we're going to go with it. All right.
Good.
All right. So yes, process. So basically, the process we had in mind was we would put the job application and all the materials on our website. We would advertise in all the places that Clackamas advertised, as well as locations that we've identified within Marion County to advertise to get candidates. We would, every 2 weeks, we would see what pool of candidates we come up with. At that point, we would evaluate the applications and see if there's anybody we want to interview. We would do Zoom interviews. All the directors would be involved in the Zoom interview. We would also have, and associates. I don't see any reason that the entire board cannot be involved in the interviews. However, we'll assign a number, a small number of people to actually ask the questions. Not that there's 10 people asking questions, but there's going to be like 3 main people who are going to be asking all the questions, and then we'll record it. We'll seek their permission to record, and then we'll also have a staff member and. Ralph Fisher expressed an interest in chiming in with his thoughts. We thought we'd go ahead and allow him to listen in. Again, not asking the questions, just listening in. Afterwards, we'd have a meeting and we'd all get together and we'd discuss the virtues and, you know, downsides of each candidate. After which, the directors would stay on and everybody else would go off and the directors would vote on how they wanted to proceed, but with the input of all of the other people. So that is the process in general. We would advertise, if we don't get enough applicants, we would revise the applicant or the application or, you know, requirements. And we will just see how things go.
I have a question.
Yeah, Darren.
You're talking about three people. What three people you, I'm assuming you yourself, Terry.
Yeah.
Maybe one staff member, then who would be the other person? I'm thinking Grant Stevens, maybe.
Interesting. I really haven't considered exactly who the interview panel would be. Brent Stevenson is an interesting choice. One thing we do have to do is we have to have a standardized list of questions. We cannot have, you know, if an additional question is asked during the interview process, that additional question has to be asked of all the participants. We can't say, oh, this participant got asked this question, this participant got asked some other question. Once a question gets asked of a participant, all the others have to be asked the same question. So it's going to be pretty standardized.
I got a question about that.
Yeah.
I've done a few of the interviews at the district in the past, but if you're asking a question about something that someone includes in their resume, that might not be applied to the other people. How do you ask them all the same questions like that? So well, I'm an expert on irrigation. You ask them a couple questions about that.
Well, let's say you say something like, explain to us how your job experience and resume appropriately prepares you for this position. What makes you think that you are going to do the right job for Marion Soil Water Conservation District? You ask relatively open-ended questions and you give them an opportunity to fold in their resume. And if they can successfully do that and sell themselves, they're a good candidate. If they can't, that's certainly, you know, a knock against them.
I think what Darren's asking though is they answer that open-ended question and there's some uncertainty what they're saying. Can you follow up? Can they follow up and clarify what they're saying?
I think that's certainly not a problem. I mean, the question's the same. It's just that we're asking for a clarification of the question or of their response. We can ask for a clarification of their response, yes. We could even say something like, you know, well, you mentioned in your resume, because the resume is part of the application and part of what we're evaluating them on, not just the interview. You mentioned in your resume X, did you want to expand on that or something? I think we can ask that sort of thing.
Gary, this is Dave. I think, you know, your original idea is certainly how the state conducts interviews. I mean, they're more of an oral test in a sense, and there's legal reasons for doing that, and so that you're treating each applicant fairly. So you have to be, even with the follow-up question, you're going to have to be very careful how that's done.
Yes. Yeah. But basically we'll also vet this with special districts, and we'll vet this with Trudy over at Cascade Employers.
So, Terry, there's only one interview then basically, right? Or is there a second interview?
There can be a second interview. It can be however we want to do it.
Okay, so it could be a screening interview and then a second interview?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, that's what I would anticipate, although we'll just sort of see what happens.
Are you going to have the whole group doing the pre-screening interview or just like the three people?
I thought that's a really good question. I mean,
yeah,
as a board member, I prefer it.
This is Lee.
Yeah, Lee, go ahead.
At the first go around, say you have 30 applications, but by vetting those 30 applications, the committee or whoever they are will come up with, say, 5, 6, 8 candidates, you know, for the first interview. Now, out of those 5, 6, or 8 candidates, you may have 3 that you're really interested in for the second interview.
No, that's right. That's kind of what I was anticipating.
Yeah.
I mean, my gut is that I think we could have 10 people listening in on the interviews. We could have all the directors and the associates listening in on the interviews, but we'd have 3 main people asking the questions. And then all the directors would just sort of chime in on their response as far as who they would like. And if the directors says they were available for a day and they don't show up, then they lose their say on that, I guess. And we'll have a scoring process. We'll have a points process for each question that we ask.
Okay. That sounds good. And like I said, as we move forward, we can flesh this out more, but
yeah. Well, anyway, so no, I'm glad to hear that you guys think that the application materials look good. Maybe we should have a motion approving the application materials and the process as described, and move forward with running it. I guess Trudy said that she thought we were ready to advertise. And she did go through, like, she did make sure that we had everything on it that needed to be there from a legal standpoint, and that we didn't do anything inappropriate or, as such. So I guess maybe we could just run it by, I'm not sure who the legal person would be to run this by, but.
Well, you could run it by D.
Maybe we need somebody who's going to be doing it on the public side. I don't know that she has so much public
experience. She's an employment person.
We can ask Lee or Dee, perhaps. Or we can confirm that with Trudy.
We could ask Trudy for a recommendation, too.
Okay, we can ask Trudy. Or if Trudy says that we're good to go, then we can move forward in that way. So I guess pending further evaluation by either Cascade Employers or D. Rubinoff, attorney at law, or, you know, basically some legal mind to check it over. I'm looking for a motion to approve this process and the documents that are presented.
I'll make the motion that we approve the process and the documents presented.
I second.
All right. Motion made and seconded. Discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All oppose? All right. Motion carries. All right. Moving along. Action item minutes. Approving the. Wow, there's 4 minutes to approve. Does somebody want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve all the minutes presented.
I'll second that motion. Motion made and seconded. Discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion.
I refrained from voting because I wasn't there in the meetings. So.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Fair enough.
Thank you for the
voters that voted in favor of this one. Thank you. I'll just leave it at that. Admin committee request, Chung Key.
Okay, so the first one, technical planner position. So we're talking about hiring a new tech person. And I imagine this one is there so that we can transfer the funds to be able to pay the salary. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay. So the reason why we are thinking of hiring one additional tech person is that right now, Meredith was a tech, but she's now doing the interim district manager job. So And also the tech staff are overstretched since the LAP and other program has grown substantially this year. But we don't, and we have less people doing it now since Meredith is on this thing, as well as we are expecting actually a healthy growth in our LAP program. So as a result, we will need more staff to be able to adequately service these projects. And so at the discussion, we talked about hiring one new one, and eventually, if Meredith chooses to return to a technical position, then we'll have two new ones. That is not a problem because there's so much work in the LAP and the other program that it would be great to have these additional staff. Also that we looked at the financial, we are very healthy in terms of our cash flow and we can pay for these without any problem, especially since we are no longer paying rent and when we have our new building. So in terms of financial impact, this is also not a problem, not a hit to our cash flow. So the admin committee's recommendation to the board right now is to immediately hire one additional technical staff.
I move that we transfer funds for the technical planner position as stated by Chunky. Motion made and seconded. Is there any discussion? If not, all.
This is Lee. I'm all in favor of an additional technical person because we keep these people busy.
Thanks for your suggestions, Lee. Any other further discussion?
I guess only one thing would have to do with, you know, my part on the program committee coming up, but with the SIA thing that we were talking about, there might be extra work there as well.
Yes, no, I think that was...
There'd be extra funds as well to help.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, we mentioned that also in the admin committee. So yeah, we're on the same page.
So you're going to go for the full 100 then, right?
The full 100?
On the SA treat on the...
that's a further discussion. That's under 10, okay. Scott. Okay, so motion made and seconded. Further discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Chunky, you want to continue?
Yep. So the next one is this. In the contracting power to accept contract amount, right now there's a conflict. Our old one is only $1,000 and the standard in Oregon State is $10,000. So we're discussing how do we reconcile $1,000, which is what we currently have on the books, and a more standard practice around the state, which is $10,000. The recommendation from the admin subcommittee is to recommend it being raised to $5,000. Not quite the full standard practice, but more than what we had previously. This will give both the chair of the board as well as the executive director, district manager, more leeway in negotiating projects and accepting contract without having to come back to the board. So that makes the district manager feel that she's trusted and she has certain power to make certain standard decisions. We did not want to make it to the full 10K in the discussion because there was still some worry that too much of amount would maybe open more easily for abuse and for some fiscal irresponsibility. So the compromise amount was $5,000.
Terry?
Yes, go ahead.
There's in the material that was prepared by the staff, there was sort of a problem in that not the section we're talking about in terms of 5,000 that the admin was talking about was the things that the director or designee of the board can do. But what you have before you also changed the action for the entire board for sole sourcing. It moved the $10,000. So it's, if you go to 2.2, okay, it should be still 10,000. Those numbers should be 10,000 because that's board action. Okay. Now, the only issue that was brought up and discussed was how much can the district manager sole source, okay, without specific permission. Okay, and that's where the 5,000 number came in. So the other numbers, the up in 2.2, they should all be 10,000. So it's what happened was, I think they said whenever 10,000 appears, put 5,000 in it. And so it made it easier on the computer to do that stuff. But that's the only observation I have, because really, you want to, whenever, other than 1.2 or whatever it is, the first entry, okay, other than 1.2, they all should be put back to 10,000. You follow what I'm saying?
Because it's a delegation of authority, right? Is that right? Is that, I'm answering you correctly, Scott?
Is that correct, Junkie?
What I said was, what you're saying is those are not delegation. Those are actually board powers. So we're talking about the delegation of authority. All right. So that you're saying some of the changes you're seeing that actually is not delegation, but it's actually restricting the board action. The ability of board to get another board member to do stuff. And that the delegation of authority to the district manager. Is that what your point is?
But it does seem, just based on the agenda, that except contracting rules revision, 10,000 reduced to 5,000, and it's just 9B on the document. So,
it seems like the document on the screen. Document on the screen, if we could just use that. Here's the section that's passing for the 5,000. So this is corrected. The 5,000 is the amount the board wanted. In the other places where it says 10,000, those have all reverted to 10,000.
Yeah.
So that's, well, here's one more. So that would reflect what Scott is saying. And you could use this document and approve it.
Okay.
Okay, so you think the document is now corrected to based on the understanding of the admin committee? Is that what you're saying, Meredith?
Based on what Scott said.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. So we could adopt this resolution and give it a number and approve it and adopt it as is if the board members feel that 5,000 is the appropriate number.
Meredith, can you go back to the last one you just changed? I think it was like 3-1 or something. Is that
okay? Yeah, there's 1-2 that Scott was referring to. And as we scroll down here, 3-1 small,
right,
small
there.
Procurements. So this is giving the district manager a designee.
So you just gave them 10. See, should that be 5 or 10?
That should be 5. If it's a district manager, we're talking about 5.
So board's 10, manager's 5.
Okay. Is that?
Thank you, Dave.
I think it needs to say the board, not the board members.
Okay, what would you like there? The board?
The board or designee. How about that?
Well, then you're not splitting the 5 and 10 again. That's, it's all.
You're talking about 3.1.
You're not giving the power. The board can do 10.
And the district
manager can do 5.
Yeah.
That's right. That's what the policy is.
Well, you could say an appointed member of the board could do 10. So it'd be voted on each time that someone wanted to spend 10,000. If the board wanted to spend 10,000, it'd be voted on by the board to give that person authority to do that.
This sounds like, I'm confused. This is saying that the district can procure services for under 10 grand without a competitive bidding requirement, not about what a manager can sign or a board can sign. Or
that's my understanding reading is just telling you you have to get a bid or not.
Right. Yeah. So that wouldn't be what the manager would sign off or the board would sign off. That's,
yeah, that board would still decide. Under 10.
Well, just remove the district manager. Just say the board or appointed member or designee and take the words district manager out of there. That solves it.
Well, my concern might be if you have an emergency situation, you can't wait for the next board meeting to get something approved. And that's why I was putting 5,000 in, because of uncertainties in life. Okay. So that's just, you know, you guys decide what you want, but I'm just trying to make a distinction between the board and the manager. And the manager could still sole source, but not at a big number.
So let me answer that. I've been here for 12 years and that's never once happened.
I'll grant you that.
And by, if you limit,
COVID didn't happen in 5 years either, did it?
If it changes 10,000 to 5,000, then you're saying you're going to require a competitive bid between 5,000 and 10,000. You're folding, you're tying your hands.
No.
Yeah. If you just leave it.
Yeah. I don't see that's.
Leave it this way. And then you have to, the board has to get the district manager to.
Because if you follow this where it's at 10, the next step's 10 to 150. So it makes sense under 10.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you change that to 5, then it's like you got to step in between missing.
Well, and you always have to do a competitive bid for something that's 7 grand or 6 grand. You're tying the district.
Well, no. All we're talking about is situations in which a manager by themselves has to make a decision, okay, to get something fixed, okay?
I think
your guys' deal. I just thought that you were giving too much latitude to the district manager making her ability to sole source at under 10. That's all.
I think, Terry, I think Mark's trying to make a comment, but when I'm screen sharing, I can't see it.
I see. Mark, did you want to chime in?
He has to type it.
I see.
I'm not sure.
I don't see anything in the chat from Mark.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, somebody was in there.
That was Catherine saying goodbye.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I mean, I'm personally good with 10,000. I think that's standard within the state, but I think the decision was made in admin committee that 5,000 would be a more appropriate number that we go through, especially since we go through LAPs where we have to approve $7,500. The board has tended to want to have more, you know, involvement, yes. yeah. Yeah, that's certainly the way these public contracting rules, the way they're written here, it does sort of really raise a lot of questions to me whether or not this is really exactly what it is that we intended in the admin committee. I think the intent in the admin committee is, as others have described, the manager can spend up to $5,000. But that the board would be allowed to, you know, to spend $10,000, you know, under a normal small procurement, that basically a district manager has to seek additional permissions from the board for small procurements between $5,000 and $10,000. Okay. I think that's right.
Okay. 1.2 looks correct. Yeah, I think that's what you were trying to go for, Terry.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
maybe all we need is 1.2.
Yeah, the other one is something different. It's saying something very different. 3.2?
3.3 or something.
Yeah, so maybe
3.1, I think.
Yeah, 3.1, but it did specifically identify the district manager in there, and I think the way it's written now clears everything up.
Yeah, I took that out. I just said the board or appointed member or designee. Let's just say
okay.
The board or designee would be the better way.
Okay.
The board or designee.
So it's just 1.2 that we're changing. Everything else stays. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
No, we're changing this one as well to take out district manager. Right okay. here.
Yeah.
So we could adopt that, this document that we're looking at now.
Somebody need
okay.
to make a motion.
All right, I move to accept the document as shown in the board meeting and modified as modified during the board meeting. Today, regarding public contracting rules and procedures.
Second it.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oppose? Motion carries. All right, Chung Ki, moving on.
So the very last one is very simple. We have a tenant there, and previously because of COVID, they haven't been working there, and previously we have allowed them to stop paying rent. We have since decided to not continue holding that office space. So they are asking to terminate the lease and to get the deposit return. The main thing that we were discussing, there was no problem in our committee meeting about letting them terminate and return the deposit. The only outstanding item was we need to find out if they indeed did pay the deposit. And Susan was supposed to find it out. Maybe Meredith, you have heard from her.
Yes, it's actually written on the agenda there. The grant oat release and return deposit paid on 12/27 of 2019.
They did pay the deposit. So in that case, yeah, what's before the board is really to approve the termination and return of deposit to them.
I move that we grant the OAT lease release and return the deposit paid on 12/27/2019.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Program committee requests.
So at our meeting yesterday, we talked about doing the SIA and partnering with ODA for that $100,000, and then they have a $25,000 for monitoring. And basically, I mean, they're going to send letters out to people. They're probably going to be contacting us anyhow. So as a group, we decided it was probably good just to partner with them. You can move funds like you can take more of than the 100,000 and put towards, I mean, the 25,000 for monitoring, you can take some of the 100,000 and pull it more to monitoring, because it sounds like we would partner up with like the Pudding River Watershed Council, and they acted like that's it would probably cost a little more than 25,000 to do that. We could use the money over a 4-year period. I guess that's, you know, the basis of our discussion was, you know, it'd be nice to have this extra money. We're probably going to get questions and everything anyhow, so we might as well just partner up with ODA on it. So I guess from there, I just have to make a motion. So I guess I move that the Water Conservation District partner with ODA for the 100,000 of technical assistance and 25,000 in monitoring assistance for the SIA. So I guess, I mean, that's the motion, I guess, that we have to make.
I'll second that motion. Discussion?
I have discussion. I'm going to refrain from voting, just a professional conflict.
Thank you.
This funding isn't available to all districts, so that's why I'm going to refrain.
Further discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Technical committee requests, Meredith.
Back up to your packets, and Dave, you can chime in on this too if you want to, or Lee. This is what we're looking for, a motion to fully fund the 19 LAP applications in the amount of $127,869. That would be the first motion.
Well, I'll make a motion that we approve the 19 LAP applications for the second cycle of the 2021 fiscal year in the amount of $127,869.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion carries.
Good question.
Yeah.
How much money is left? How much money is left for LAP for next round of funding?
None. That's why we have these two motions pending here.
Okay.
Those in. That's your second page there. It tells you where we are in each of those funds. That's the documentation for these three motions.
Scott.
Yeah, I do want to point out to you guys that you have $195,000 on a budget line for contingencies. And the purpose of the contingencies is to have money available where you fall short in other accounts. So it's your choice and how you want to do it, but you have more than one way to skin. Take care of this issue.
All right. Meredith, did you want to continue about item B?
Let's let Dave. Dave's got something to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dave, please go ahead.
Well, I was going to address Scott and the second motion. But so we're the cover crop money will cover the amount of shortfall for the applications we just approved. And then we're also going to make a motion to include some other funds to offer a third cycle. Now, depending on the number of applications that we get during that third cycle, those contingency funds may come into play because there's only like $37,000 or something then available. Right, Meredith?
That's right. Here it is, right here on the screen. We're taking the 45 for the cover crop and we're taking this out of previous funds. For our next round, that'll give us about.
We don't see your screen, Meredith. If you're,
oh,
you have to share screen.
I wonder. Okay. So, here are the three motions that we're reviewing, and if you look on your second page there, this is where those numbers are pulled from. So we're taking the 45 out of the cover crop because that's a program that was eliminated, so we can use that funding up. And then the funding available from previous years, that's projects that we awarded money to, but for some reason they weren't able to do their project. So those two are the ones that we're moving over into the LAPs. And the cover crop will about cover it. And this 37 will be for our next round. Does that make sense?
Yes. So,
so we need two more motions, Dave.
I was wondering if we could combine the second, third. Do those have to be separate things?
You should be able to combine them.
Just state it.
I'll make a motion that we move the conservation cover crop program money in the amount of $45,000 and the previous year landowner assistant program money in the amount of $37,732, move both of those funds to the LAP funds.
A second.
Motion made and seconded. Is discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All oppose? Motion carries. All right. Does anybody have anything else for the good of the order?
One quick thing, and that is that I want to tell you that, as Kyle probably knows, we get a local paper here, an advertising paper called Our Town, and we had a wonderful article there about Sarah and working with some folks in terms of their conservation practices. And I want to congratulate whoever got that to happening. So that was a really nice PR job.
Nice. That's wonderful. Thanks for sharing. All right, anything else?
We do have the delegation of authority document here. I don't know if you wanted to take a look at it or not. We were going to change two things on that. The first was to the 5,000. And then the second thing we were going to change is some of the secretary treasurer's job. I didn't include it in the packet because we only had it partially complete, but you could vote on the 5,000 now if you wanted to. Or you can just wait till next month.
How about let's just wait till next month? All right. Thank you, everyone. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.